Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who also played Raymond Hahn on an episode of All American Girl in 1994, and myself, Robert Duncan McNeil, your favorite helmsman. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. Gary.
Hey, wow. This is new territory for us, having you read the intro. It's very exciting.
Oh, it is exciting.
All American Girl, that's the show. That's the project I was working on when I found out that I booked Voyager. So that was right before. Yeah.
I remember this because I feel like the first time I met you, you had literally just filmed it or something because you were there for a hair makeup check or I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that right.
Gosh, how did that happen?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I was cast as a different role, a co-star role, for the pilot episode of this sitcom, which was starring Margaret Cho, the comedian. It was her sitcom, basically. And I was cast as handsome Korean man number two, or maybe three. I don't know. One of those numbers. I don't know. But they liked me so much. The producers were like, listen, we're just going to bring you back in our first episode as the guest star, as Dr. Raymond Hahn. So a much more significant role. You're the guest star. Yeah, you're playing her boyfriend through the whole episode. And I said, so what are you going to do with my role that I just, you know, that you just
did it on the
taped?
Pilot.
Yeah, on the pilot, it's clearly going to be me. And it's I'm playing another person. They said, oh, we're going to recast it. Which in the world of television sitcoms, that's very rare for them to recast that, you know, especially with a three camera shoot for a sitcom. They typically don't do that. So they were going to recast it. And I recommended a friend of mine who actually worked on Next Generation, Tim Lunabos. I said, Tim's pretty good to do this role. You should get him. He's actually Korean and he's half Korean, half Caucasian. So check him out. And he actually ended up booking the role.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Replacing me. Yeah. So I got a friend of mine in on that. So that's good. But I got to be amazing. Honest. I was sitting in Clyde Kusatsu's trailer, who plays the father on All American Girl. And that's when I got the page and I go, Clyde, this is my agent. I think this is Voyager. The information whether or not I booked this. Can I use your phone? And he's like, of course. And so I'm dialing my agent, and that's when he, you know, informed me that I booked the role of Harry Kim, and I had to get my butt over to Paramount for that fitting before the end of the day.
My favorite part of what you just described was I was sitting in someone's trailer, and then I got the page.
Yeah, I got the page.
That's my favorite part.
I got the pager.
Your beeper went off.
You know what's funny though, Robbie? There are people watching and listening to us that have no clue what a pager is.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like, what? Yeah, huh? Yes. That back in the day, everybody, we had these little devices that kind of they would just alert us to someone trying to contact us is what it was. I don't know. How else would you explain it, Robbie?
You could send a message on, you would dial someone's pager.
Right.
And then you could send a message, I think using your keypad on your phone.
I think it just showed the number. I think it just showed the number that paged you. That's it.
I think
could
it
you
was.
Send a message? I didn't think you could text anybody could. At that point.
No, maybe it wasn't. I don't even remember. But it would send your number that was getting paged.
Yeah. And you knew, everyone knew the number of their agent, their talent agent. Like, oh, it's my agent. You know, it's time to call them back. So, it was a Beverly Hills number and it was the agency. And I knew that was them. And then that's when I found out I was going to be Harry.
That's
amazing. That's pretty exciting. Yeah. Can I show you the shirt? Okay.
Yeah.
So this shirt was given to me by Sabrilu. It says, Sabrilu, I am your father. And it has all of their. Thanks for giving us life. Because remember, I came up with the term Sabrilu to encapsulate
the three names.
Sarah, Sabrina, and Luce became Sabrilu, and they gave me this shirt on the cruise. So there
amazing.
You go.
Amazing.
I am their father.
In Star Wars.
Star Wars phraseology, I guess. Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. So, all right, let's get to our episode.
Body and Soul. You should know this episode.
Yes, I knew this was the episode.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go watch this episode, and we'll be right back with our recap and discussion of Body and Soul. Woo! We're back from watching Robbie's episode, Body and Soul.
Aww.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, you had some interesting camera angles we've never, ever seen before. Some shots that are super cool.
As I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, I was trying things. I was getting a little more confident, but yeah. I think the success was mixed for me on this in terms of my direction.
Okay.
But it was a little more experimental and trying some things.
Yeah,
but
that's what it seemed like. You were trying some different concepts and different ideas and different setups for shots, you know, which is always good because you need to try and push the envelope as much as you can. We were both wrong about the writer.
Yes, we were.
It is the story is by Michael Taylor. The teleplay was interesting. It's by three people. Mm-hmm. And the way it was listed, it said Eric Morris and, spelled out A-N-D, Phyllis Strong. So I'm assuming they're a writing team.
Exactly.
And then there was an ampersand and that separated Mike Sussman. So it's sort of like, am I right to say that? So Eric Morris and Phyllis Strong were together working on it. And Mike Sussman was on his own as another party working on this.
Yes,
on
the exactly. Template. Okay. Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michael Taylor had the story directed by yours truly. Let's do our poetry synopsis.
Here is my haiku for Body and Soul.
Mm-hmm.
A hunt for photons. Doctor must hide in seven. Photons aren't so bad.
Very funny.
Thank you.
Good. Good. Yo. All right. Here we go with our limerick synopsis.
Lay it on me.
For Body and Soul. Here we go. When Doc is downloaded into Seven, things get really bizarre. While Tuvok struggles awkwardly with intense pon farr. Doc gets Seven pretty hammered. Rannick becomes quite enamored. A new perspective can show how things truly are.
I had to use all my strength not to laugh throughout that. That was very good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good job. Okay. Onwards and forwards. Guest stars. This is my first time doing this. I felt so privileged and honored to switch this up a little bit.
I know.
Okay. So we have, first of all, we have Fritz Sperberg. I mean, you couldn't have had this. Fritz is an American citizen, but this is the most German name that you could possibly have.
Fritz Sperberg,
who played Captain Rannick.
Yes.
Very, very first credit is a 1982 TV movie version of Macbeth.
Wow.
He played Banquo in that TV version of Macbeth.
I wonder if it was like a PBS thing, like public television or something.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, when was that?
Who did Shakespeare?
In the 80s.
On TV in the 80s.
Yeah. So maybe a public access thing. Could be. Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Marva Hicks. Marva Hicks played T'Pel, and she's played T'Pel before. And in this episode, she plays the holographic version of T'Pel, but yet still T'Pel.
Yeah.
So three episodes of Voyager, including this one. Her very, very first credit was the soap opera One Life to Live.
Oh,
now that soap opera ran from 1968 to 2013. She was on that soap opera in 1968.
No way.
As a kid.
She was a kid.
Yes.
Yeah, she was a kid.
She was a kid.
Oh,
she was a kid.
Gosh.
Next up, we have Megan Gallagher, who portrayed the role of Lieutenant Jaren, who was not only the tactical, but the medic, but the multiple. She had all
everything.
Types of roles.
She's the utility.
Yes.
Does it all.
She does it all. Her first credit is in 1984. She did an episode of a TV series, which you probably remember. It was called Buffalo Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Buffalo Bill.
Dabney Coleman.
Played a daytime talk show host. And so she was on that show, episode. In 1984.
Wow.
Now, interestingly enough, she also went to Juilliard.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
And so did her sister, who was there at the time I was there. So I knew her sister first.
Oh, wow.
Melissa Gallagher.
Okay, okay.
Was there at the same time, not in my class, but she was in a class close to mine. And yeah. I had heard about Megan. Megan was already doing very well. I think she was doing maybe China Beach at the time.
Well, first of all, let's just say she won two theater awards for her work on the Broadway show version of A Few Good Men.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what kind of put her on the map. And then she almost quit Hollywood. Los Angeles was so really? Stressful. Yes, because she just seemed she wasn't able to really book anything substantial. She had a few minor credits, but nothing to write home about. And so she almost quit to go to law school.
Wow.
And then right before that happened, she booked a recurring role on Hill Street Blues. She did 19 episodes of that. And that's what kind of turned her whole career around.
Wow.
Entirely. Yeah. So she almost left the industry.
She's awesome. Megan's awesome. And she's very good friends with Bob Picardo.
I'm sure. Yeah.
They're very old friends.
I'm wondering, do you think Bob got her the role? Helped? I mean, did he suggest her name? I'm guessing.
I don't think so. No? I remember casting on this. I remember going into the auditions and as the director and casting the actors. And I believe Megan came in to audition and I knew about Megan. I don't know if I'd ever met her before, but I knew about her because of her sister
and her sister
work and stuff like that. So no, I think she auditioned. I think Fritz auditioned. Everyone
auditioned. Yeah. So it was a pleasant surprise for Bob Picardo to look at the call sheet and go, "Hey, here's my old friend, Megan."
Yeah.
So,
and I think he knew that she was auditioning. He might've mentioned something to me.
Okay.
But yeah, she was awesome.
So Hill Street Blues, when she booked that role, that was 1989. Mm-hmm. She also went on a talk show. She was a guest on a late night talk show called the Pat Sajak Show.
Oh,
in 1989.
Gosh.
So Pat Sajak had gotten all this
at a late
fame.
Night show.
Well, yes, but because of the job, the game, you know, the game
Wheel
show
of Fortune.
That he does, Wheel of Fortune, exactly. He, you know, impressed all the big wigs, the execs, to the point where they said, "Hey, we're going to give you a shot at a late night talk show." And they gave him that shot, which lasted for 1 year, and that was done. But that was a show that she was a guest on. So
wow, how funny.
Megan Gallagher. And finally, we have David Starwalt, who played Captain Number Two, the second captain, alien captain that we deal with, well, that Janeway deals with.
Yeah.
And his very first credit was an episode of Lou Grant in 1977.
Oh, so, my gosh.
That's a long time ago.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
Great, great
Lou
show.
Grant. All right. So those are our people.
Thank you for
that.
Doing that. It's fun to go down those rabbit holes, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's jump right into this.
Let's
start off with this opening shot of a very cool comet kind of going across screen. It's being followed by the Delta Flyer. We jump into the interior of the Delta Flyer. What do you call that back section? What do you call that area?
The lab area.
Okay. Yeah. Back lab area.
Yeah.
The doctor's analyzing a piece of the comet and
he beams it into this tube in the back and analyzing it. Suddenly there's a bump. Yeah, he yells at Harry, calls up, and we see Harry is flying the ship.
Have I flown the Delta Flyer before this?
So. I don't think so either. Yeah.
I was pretty excited to see that.
But that was very cool.
Yeah, but Harry's clearly annoyed with the doctor. We can tell this has been something that they've been doing for a little bit of time, and we learn that they are going to continue on this mission or assignment, which is, you know, getting under Harry's skin a little bit. So the doc calls Seven to head towards the back area. Come join me.
Yeah. Come join me in the back. I want to show you something.
Yeah.
Exactly. She goes back there. He says it's pre-animate biomatter, the beginnings of life. And he gives this big speech about the beginnings of life. Beautifully written, by the way, I got to say. Yes. Like, it's an inspiring little speech.
It is inspiring little speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The about miracle creation.
Primitive strands of DNA becoming, and he's basically talking about what they could end up being, all these amazing things. And it's a nice speech. But Seven sort of rolling her eyes during this whole thing. Delta Flyer hits a few more bumps. The doctor's really annoyed. He calls back up to Harry, but Harry in the cockpit yells back, "We're under attack."
Under attack. Yeah.
Those alien spaceships are pretty cool looking.
That's what I wrote down.
Yes.
Every time I saw them, I'm like, those are cool. The color.
Did you
like,
have any input into that when you talked to VisFX, where you're like, "Hey guys, it'd be cool if you did this thing." No, they just showed it to you, right?
They just showed me, but it was cool.
It's so cool. It's so close to our modern day fighter jets, the shape of it. You know what I'm saying? To me, it looks like an F-35 or whatever is the newest, the newest fighter jet is now. I have no clue.
They looked very cool.
That's what they look like. Kind of like a futuristic sci-fi version of that.
It was hard to tell how big they were too, though.
Yes, that's true.
I guess we see it later on, parked next to Voyager. Well, so it's got to be. But at first I was like, is it a shuttle? Is that a full-size ship? I couldn't
tell. Yeah, but then later, the Delta Flyer is in their cargo hold. So you know it's big enough to hold the Delta Flyer. Yeah, so I'm assuming it is as big as Voyager is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, probably. It's a little bit smaller, but on par, This patrol ship goes by. It's chasing the flyer. We cut inside, and Harry hails the vessel and says, look, we are not here to hurt anybody. We've got, peaceful intentions. We're just looking at this comet. And they say, well, you are carrying a suspected photonic insurgent.
Yeah.
We're attacking
you for transporting a photonic insurgent through
a hologram,
space. Yes. And it's like, oh, you got to be joking. But that's their deal. That's their
narrative. But Harry's like, that's just our doctor. And, and they basically say, well, they shoot at you. They disable the thrusters. There's more weapons fire. You try to call Voyager for help, but
our
communication system is knocked out. And then suddenly they lock on with a tractor beam. And it was a very cool space shop with the tractor beam, because then this other beam comes in.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And we learn that it's a disruption field that starts the doctor fritzing in the back. He starts fritzing, and so that's what that second beam was. And they pull the flyer in as the doctor sort of starts to degrade. And Harry yells back. He goes, Seven, you've got to do something. Hide the doctor.
Hide the doctor, yeah.
And so we don't see what she does, but we cut back up to Harry, and four Locurum beam into the back. They've got weapons and... Yeah.
It's basically Rannick and Jaren and all two other people.
They head to the back with Harry, but they just find Seven back there. She's all alone. So we don't know where she hid the doctor.
And she comes up with this story that it was you guys who decompiled his matrix. You murdered him. So that's her story to the aliens.
Yeah, that's her story. But she's acting a little weird to me.
She sure is.
I was like... That's not Seven of Nine. What's going on already? Like talking a little bit like the doctor, but they wouldn't know that because they don't know her.
Right. But we as the audience know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Immediately we're like, wait a minute. That sounds like the doctor, but it's Seven. Something's up here.
I will say right now that Jerry Ryan did an excellent job. So whatever you did to tweak her as a director, good job for you too. But boy, she got the essence of Bob Picardo. Or not Bob Picardo, but the doctor down pat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really
she was great.
God, she was so good.
She was so funny and switching back and forth when she, puts him back into his mobile emitter. Just the back and forth was great. She had so many funny moments.
Yeah. I was really proud of her, to be honest. So
it was great.
Yeah. Okay. Continue.
All right. So basically they go back there. We know something's up. Yeah. She blames them for basically killing the doctor. And then we go back out to space.
Yeah. Oh, and also they accuse us of being manufacturing bioweapons. That was the other thing that they say back there.
Yeah, we're manufacturing bioweapons, and they find the doctor's holo emitter and they're like, what is this?
Yeah. Seven lies.
She lies and she says, what does she say?
She says portable regeneration.
Yeah. I have a unique physiology and it maintains my cybernetic systems. So they're not quite convinced. So they keep the mobile holo emitter.
Right.
And they arrest her. They arrest Harry.
They arrest all of us. Yeah.
Yes. And then we go to space. We see the Locorum ship fly by. Mm-hmm. This is where I said, nice ship.
Such a nice ship. I'd like really that ship.
Awesome.
It's kind of like the Lamborghini of ships in a way. It just looks sleek.
It looked really cool. Woo, yeah. It's funny that we both felt that.
Oh my God.
Every time I saw it, I'm like, we need to keep this ship.
Yeah. Can we trade ships? Can we give you Voyager and you can, we'll take this one.
It's very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Then we go inside the Locorum ship. We're in their prison area. Seven and Kim are being arrested.
Do you think I yelled too much in that one?
You yelled. I said, Harry hits the wall and yells. Nice drama. That's what I wrote down.
You're okay with that then. Okay. Because I was like, I want to talk to your superior right in the opening of the scene when he throws me great. Towards. And I wasn't sure if you thought that was too loud.
I thought it was great. The only thing I was like, why do they throw Harry so roughly and then help Seven step over the threshold? I was like,
he shit this.
This is weird. It's weird.
Because Harry Kim is the Rodney Dangerfield of Star Trek. No respect.
You were fighting back. She wasn't fighting back.
No, she. Yes. Just a quick rewind back to the scene where the doctor is pontificating about these DNA strands. Yes. I like the blocking there that you did. It was all over the place in terms of movement. It had some good movement. The only thing that bugged me at one point, it was that weird, awkward, super close thing. Like he was right on her back almost. And that was the only time where I was like,
he walked behind her. He kind of said something on one side and then walked behind her and came up over the other shoulder.
Yeah. Popped up that way. And it looked like he was about to touch her back, but then he backed off. And so it was a little awkward in terms of that one moment right there. That's it.
There might've been some forced blocking in this. I think the other thing when I was directing it, that I was trying to do was move the camera and move the actors more. Cause I feel like,
and you did, I think
I felt like I moved the camera a lot. I moved the actors a lot. Sometimes it felt a little forced. I'll talk about a couple of those places where I was like, I don't know if this worked, but, but I liked the blocking generally for this episode, the way the actors moved around and were busy. They had things to do and movement, but in this scene, we see more of Seven acting like the doctor. And
Harry doesn't know yet, though.
she says, or he, the doctor in her body says, you know, it's not as dire as you think. And Harry is just really upset. He says, we've been captured by aliens and Voyager doesn't know what's going on and the doctor's destroyed. And she says, the reports of my decompilation have been greatly exaggerated in a manner that is definitely
the doctor.
And Harry's like, doc.
Yeah.
Great. And then,
please
state the nature of the medical emergency. Seven downloaded my program. So the cat's out of the bag.
What I hated about the scene was the dialogue. When she starts smelling and it turns out to be Harry's body odor.
Oh, I thought that was so funny.
I just think that Harry Kim prides himself on being, and also Garrett Wong, on being a clean human being and constantly showering and taking care of business, you know? I just hated playing like the stinky person. Like I was, what was that in Charlie Brown and the Peanuts? There's a
Pigpen.
Yeah, Pigpen. I was going to say something else, but Pigpen. Yeah. I felt like I was Pigpen.
You were like Pigpen in this scene.
Unfortunately.
It's the story about her senses. First, she touches the doctor in her body touches the force field and it hurts. And so he's like, wow, that hurt. That's great for my medical journals. And then
the smelling.
The doctor Seven, let's call it the doctor Seven for now. So the doctor Seven says, what is that smell? I thought she was so funny.
Yeah.
And then she walks around again, the blocking. I like that. I had her sort of take us around the room and then it landed with you in the foreground and her looking over at you. And it was, I felt really proud of the comedy blocking.
It's funny. The comedy blocking was great. I actually
you just didn't want to be the stinky one.
I didn't want to be the stinky one. And then I printed up a photo of that a still photo of me sitting there and her over my shoulder going, that smell of like, that look of like, oh, I just smelled something horrible. I printed that up to take to conventions as a photo to sign.
Yeah.
And very few people went for that photo.
Oh, it was funny. Cause I think like, that's such a funny moment.
I thought it was one of the few times that I had any still photography with Seven just alone. So that's what I went with, but people didn't want to take that one. So that
I'll buy
me out.
It. I'll okay, buy good. It from you.
All right. You know what? You don't have to pay a dime. I'll send them all to you. I'll just
you can
wallpaper one room with it actually if you'd like. So.
But I do like in this scene that we do learn that the doctor is sensing not just inside her body, you know, downloaded into her or nanoprobes or cortical. Yeah, he's downloaded in there. Not only is he just downloaded, but he is experiencing all of the human senses that she experiences. So. Touch, smell, taste, all of these things that they'll go into. There was a shot where the Dr. Seven sort of touches her body and comes up.
Is that your choice or his choice?
I don't know who's that. Don't know.
Because it says, Harry says, and now you're in control of Seven's body. And EMH7 goes, total control. It seems, and just stops before touching.
Yeah, the basically area. Doing a joke about, I can feel my skin, but I start to go down to my breasts, yes. and I stop because I'm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it was. I don't know. I felt like the shot was too tight, with the hand on the arm, and then I think the joke, almost touching, her breasts was not a great joke. I don't know. It didn't work for me.
I don't think that was your idea.
I don't think it was, honestly. And it was either scripted or maybe Bob's
idea. We can ask Bob, actually. Yeah. So, okay. But that bothered you a little bit, clearly.
Yeah, it just didn't work for me. Yeah. And it felt a little forced. Objectifying of her body or in some way.
It felt a little 1990s.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah.
Okay.
I did like the scene overall. We go to a space flyby next of Voyager. We've got a captain's log. She basically says we finished a maintenance layover and we're meeting the Delta Flyer in 48 hours. So they don't know any of this is happening yet.
No.
They think everything's fine. We go into Tuvok's quarters.
Plum Tuvok. We're there.
There's Tuvok and Paris is scanning him, but Tuvok is shaking and sweating and he's clearly not well.
He looks like he's on a bender.
Yeah. And Tom says it looks like a virus. And Tuvok's like, no.
Not a virus.
Replicate this formula the doctor made for me. And Tom's like, I can't just replicate medicine without knowing what it is. And Tuvok admits that it's Ponfar. Tuvok says, if you must know, I am suffering from a neurochemical imbalance. And Paris is like, an imbalance. And he goes, it's native to my species. And that's when Tom, this is the kind of imbalance that comes around once every seven years.
Good job.
So it was funny. It awkward.
Yes.
I like when Tom says maybe the meditation. Tuvok suggests that if I meditate, I can stay in control of my symptoms. And Tom says, well, if that doesn't work, there's always a cold sonic shower. Was funny, but it was very sweet. And at the end, Tuvok doesn't want everybody to know, and Tom says, well, according to my tricorder, it's just a mild case of the Tarkalian flu. And Tuvok seems happy with that answer.
Satisfied with that. So when you're filming this scene, did you have Marvin Rush watch the monitor for you, or did you have Jerry
probably
Fleck, or...
probably Marvin? I think I do remember when I did these kind of scenes, I would tell Marvin, hey, here's what I'm going for. Here's what I think the important story points are. Yeah. Make sure that I'm delivering that. And and he would watch it. But we didn't have playback or anything, so I couldn't see. I would watch it with the stand-ins doing Tom.
Yeah.
And my stand-in or someone would do it with Tim Russ. And so I'd watch the rehearsal that way. But then when I was out there, I would check with Marvin. So.
Yeah. Well, you did a good job, even though you were directing. I thought their pacing was on point. So
thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. You. All righty.
And next we go to the Lacorum ship.
Oh, the detention brig. The brig.
Yes.
Lacorum.
Yeah, we go in the ship. Seven is, or Dr. Seven is eating what looks like a cookie to me.
Well, no. Well, the first shot is of Harry. You got the shot on me. And I bite into what looks like a bread roll or something like that, or a cookie, whatever. And I'm like, this. Yeah. I give the same face that Seven gives in smelling Harry's BO. And I'm like,
this cookie. Worst. It's disgusting. Yeah.
Then you go past me onto Seven and she's like, it's like savoring
the,
this.
The Dr. Seven says, oh, I had no idea eating was such a sensual experience. And is so into it. So that was kind of funny.
He goes, feeling it slide down Seven's esophagus. It's exquisite. And then, and that's Harry. And Harry answers, they're prison rations. I mean, this is jail food.
This is gross.
This
food,
is the worst.
The doctor's never experienced eating. So
there's no Michelin stars here at all.
No.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No. And he says, the doctor says, when we get back, maybe you can program my program with a stomach, and we could construct a holographic stomach to store the food for eventual recycling if we have to. He just wants to keep experiencing
eating. Yeah. And Harry's like, look, let's just get to the current present situation and think about how to get out of this. Let's stop talking about making a stomach for you. You know, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Jaren comes in and says Seven that she needs to come with them. Mm-hmm. And Harry stands up and says, I'm the senior officer. If you're going to take someone, it's going to be me, which I thought was great. You know, Harry is really trying to protect Seven and do the right thing according to, you know, protocol and be official and all that. But they're taking Seven.
And at the same time, I kept thinking, why is Harry volunteering to be basically probed by the aliens in essence? Like, why is he volunteering for that? I guess he's just trying to be nice.
He's doing the honorable thing.
Yes.
But the doctor Seven turns to Harry and says, Ensign, I can take care of myself. And then as she egged this, tells Jaren or one of the guards, my compliments to the chef on these horrible biscuits.
The background actor's expression on his face is like, oh. And I was like,
like that reading. So To remind everybody, I've mentioned it before, but I had Bob Picardo. I took my video camera in his trailer one day before we shot this, and I had him do all the scenes where Seven was supposed to, Ryan was supposed to be talking like him.
Yeah.
I had Bob do it in his trailer. Yeah. And this is one line where I was like, oh, I think she literally copied how he delivered it.
Yeah.
Compliments to the chef.
The chef. Yeah.
It just had the ring of Bob's line reading so perfectly.
You recorded Bob Picardo saying all the lines at Seven, and then you handed that footage.
I gave that to Jerry.
Jerry Ryan, and she practiced, and she kind of got into doctor mode. So good job.
Yeah.
Good. Smart move. Yeah. And no one told you to do that, correct? No one told you to do that.
No.
Like Berman, no one said, hey, by the way, you better do this. Like, this was your own initiative.
Yeah.
Which is a very smart thing to do as a director in this episode.
Mm-hmm. It was great. We go to the shuttle bay. We see the Delta Flyer in their shuttle bay.
Yeah.
And then we cut inside. And there is Rannick.
Rannick. Yeah.
Rannick.
Rannick.
He's inside. He's examining the Delta Flyer. And he's figured out a lot of the systems of the Delta Flyer, the Duranium Reinforced Hull. And he thinks this is because they're smugglers.
And then Seven's like, look, we're not, how many ways am I going to tell you this? We're not smugglers. We're not terrorists. And Ronick is like, oh, so if you're innocent, you won't mind telling me more about what this is. And he points at the replicator. Yeah.
And the Dr. Seven says it's just a food replicator. And he thinks it can be used to create bioweapons or something. And, She makes a joke about not unless you count Mr. Neelix's bouillon souffle. But then she replicates a slice of New York cheesecake.
Right.
He thinks it might be poison.
Yeah. And the way she said, oh, please, sounded so much like the doctor. I love that. She grabs it. She starts eating it. And it's the best thing that she's ever. Well, first thing with real taste, not prison food. And she loves it. She's like, but what I love the most is when she hands him, she goes, oh, no. Let me replicate another piece for you. She does. But then instead of handing him the fresh piece, she gives him the one she already took a bite
out of. Yeah, that was funny.
I find that was probably.
There was a lot of funny in this.
You put that in there.
I might have. I mean,
or do you think Jerry suggested that?
I don't know. Who knows?
That was a hard laugh for me. The minute she gave him the already bitten one. Yes. It was like, okay. So
it's funny because we didn't do a lot of comedy on Voyager. And I do feel like these last couple episodes, like Someone to Watch Over Me and Body and Soul that I directed.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know if I was consciously trying to put more comedy in or if I just happened to get some that had comedy, but I was really starting to find my, you know, Voyager comedy taste a little more directing these. Yeah.
There's some wonderful comedic moments that I definitely LOL'd out. Big time. Did I say that right? LOL'd out? No. Laughed out loud.
Very funny scene.
After the cheesecake, they keep ordering stuff. There's a passage of time and you have an awesome shot. You just pan across all these little dishes of things that were replicated that they've had a feast. They've had a banquet.
It was a disgusting mess.
There was so much food
and
there.
Drinks everywhere.
Everywhere. And you can hear them talking and they're laughing and they're clearly drunk.
They're
drunk
and they're full.
You end up on this shot above. Oh, it was insane. I was like, whoa. I mean, that was awesome. And
it was
a
cool shot.
Holy moly. So this was experimentation.
It was a little bit. Yeah, we were on a crane. We're on a crane arm, so we came over all the trash and the food and then revealed that they're both drunk. Seven's lying face up with her legs kind of like
askew.
Yes. And he's down on the floor.
And he's a hot mess too. Everyone's a mess in this one, right?
Yeah. It's
funny. Oh, God. Yeah. So you got no flack for that then? I love it. Mm-mm. I love it. Clearly, this is a shot that you had planned for beforehand. It wasn't on the fly because you requested the crane for that day's shooting, correct? Like you were like, I need a crane for this then. Yeah. Okay. All right. Continue.
I love when Seven talks about, you know, my life truly didn't begin until I came on board Voyager and met the one person that changed my life. And Ranik says,
the captain.
And she goes, no, our doctor.
Doctor.
That's right. The photonic that you hate. He's amazing. If you could have only known him, ruggedly handsome, with towering intellect. And if he and I hadn't been colleagues, well, now we'll never know what heights we could have reached. So I love the drunk kind of ranting about how amazing the doctor is. It was very, very funny. And we see this kind of sensitive side of the captain too. He's like, he's starting to, you know, fall for her charms and in his drunkenness.
My goodness, it was quite funny.
She talks about her in this drunken state. She does say, you know, she needs the mobile emitter, basically her regeneration device back because she needs her regeneration, and she stumbled on it.
Regeneration
device. And then she says, as you can see, my cortical implants are already destabilizing or something. So
yeah.
Blaming the drunkenness on she needs the mobile emitter back.
Yeah. I mean, she kind of puts the stakes high. She goes, if I survived that long, and that's, you know, she baits him. And that's when he says, what do you mean?
But he says, I'll give this back to you if you do something for me.
But we don't know what that is.
We don't know what it is yet. We don't see it. And then we cut back to the prison.
Back to the brig. Yeah. I love this scene for Harry because number one, we're not talking about Harry's BO, so I'm pretty excited. But I really enjoyed this scene because it's Harry seeing a super inebriated Seven walking back in. And Harry clearly thinks this is just the worst thing you could possibly do is drink on the job, basically. Mm-hmm. So love the repartee back and forth between Harry and Seven. And also I really enjoyed your blocking. You kept it moving as well in this scene too. So really good.
Kept it moving around. Eventually Harry helps Seven to bring the doctor back out to his hollow emitter now that she has it.
I loved your blocking of when you put Seven on, put her face on the bed because
she's so drunk.
She lays just her face there. Yeah. And she goes, you know, he's not such a bad guy, that Captain Rannoch. I thought, oh, this is great. So good.
It was funny. It was a funny episode.
A lot of funny stuff in this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the doctor is out of her body, and Seven immediately feels sick and is really mad at the doctor
for drinking
and getting drunk. And
abusing her body. Yes. Basically, no consent. This is, you know, an early no consent issue here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She's mad.
She is very mad.
We're still in the prison and we still have the doctor separated from, he's already out, but he's off to the side. Like Harry sort of ushered them to the side so they're not in view, right?
Yes.
But of course, in this day and age, there should be security cameras all the time.
That's exactly what Rebecca said. She's like, don't they have cameras in their prison cell? Like, we even have that.
We have them. You see everything that transpires in a prison cell. So it should have been recorded that the doctor showed up or defritzed or, appeared after we put him back into the emitter.
She talks about abusing his body, her body. And Harry says, you know, look, let's get back on track. We've got to find a way out of here. We do find out in the scene, by the way, that Seven is aware of everything happening. So it's not like her consciousness.
It just goes away.
Goes and away.
Takes a vacation. No, she can feel. Well, she knows that this is what's happening, right?
But
this conversation.
Yeah, the doctor's
happening.
In control of her body, but she's aware of what he's doing.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
But they decide that they've got to figure out a way to tap into their communication systems.
Yeah, Harry comes up with that plan, right? So Harry says, tap into the comm system, get a message to Voyager. Mm-hmm. And the doctor says, well, deciphering alien computers is not exactly my forte. Mm-hmm. But Seven goes, well, it is one of mine, if you can get me close enough while they're accessing their systems. So basically the plan is the doctor needs to jump back into the body and Seven... / the doctor needs to, in essence, do a little bit of a spy mission to find out exactly what these codes are on the computer, like how to, get out of the situation. What are the command protocols that the captain happens to use? So these are this is the mission that Harry suggests.
So they, re-download the doctor back into her body. And now we go into the medical bay, the Lacorum sick bay, basically.
Yeah.
And the doctor / Seven is assisting Jaren, who is Megan Gallagher, and assisting with some kind of medical case. There's someone on a bio bed there. And
That person was attacked by one of the photonics. So that's what it was, right? So photonic has a viral weapon, which the cerebral cortex is attacked. So you survive for a little bit, but then at some point there's complete synaptic failure and you're done.
Yeah.
So in a few days. And so this
so-
is...
Yeah. So the doctor / Seven says, well, we need to synthesize a neural inhibitor. Mm-hmm. And then we learn that Jaren is not just like a medic, the chief medical officer here, but she's also an engineer. And she says kind of a tactical, kind of a jack of all trades.
Yeah, because a third of their crew was lost to the photonic insurgents. Mm-hmm. That's why.
And the doctor / Seven says, oh, well, you really, know your way around a medical bay and maybe that's your true calling. And Jaren says, well, actually, Emmick thought that I'd become a teacher.
Mm.
And the doctor / Seven's like, who's Emmick? And Jaren says there was a photonic that helped raise her and her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt like Emmick was like family before the insurgency.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't understand why Emmick turned to the rebellion because they never treated him like a servant. He was part of the family, but he turned against them anyway. Mm-hmm. And then the doctor / Seven says, well, do you think it's possible he felt subjugated?
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting kind of perspective. I like that little exchange about the doctor sort of seeing their perspective, and we get the doctor's perspective, but through Seven, it was like layers of scenes going on.
Definitely. Good job, Majeri Ryan, playing all those different layers.
They kind of flirt by the end of this, by the way.
There's a little bit of flirting,
which is weird because it's the doctor, but yet it's Seven.
Yeah, saying it.
So Jaren is, probably assumes like, Oh, that's not flirting. That's just connecting about my family, Emic and all these other things. So yeah. It was an interesting other layer of the scene, which was nice.
For sure. Then we head back to Club Tuvok. The medication is not happening. It's Tuvok.
It's not working.
No, it's not working at all. Yeah, he wants to maybe increase the dosage, and Paris doesn't believe this is the smart idea. But
what do you think of this blocking? This is when they walk over by the window.
Talk about this blocking first before we go into the scene.
Paris is still there trying to help Tuvok, but it's not. This medication is not working. Mm-hmm. Workening
is another way. It's not working.
And Tuvok just goes, maybe I'll just tough this out until the doctor comes back, and walks over to the window. He's trying to just compose himself, and then Tom comes over and stands shoulder to shoulder with him, and they don't look at each other because Tom's awkwardly sort of suggesting, like, you could go to the holodeck and maybe, take care of things in a holodeck sort of way with your Ponfar. And they don't look at each other the whole scene until the very end. I actually love
that. I thought it was great. I like that blocking. I mean,
I loved it. They're looking you're not at critiquing the window. It, no, but it was bold.
You know what it was like? You know, when you have any type of conversation at a men's urinal, you never look at the guy next to you at the urinal.
That's
you're
just what it was like. Hey, it was like two guys at the urinal. Yeah. How about those Yankees, huh? Great game.
Is that what you wrote in your script? Like urinal scene?
Yeah, something like that.
Aww.
I mean, none of that was scripted, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying it was a good choice, though.
Yeah. But at first, Tom brings this up, like, hey, maybe you could try this. And Tuvok's like, no, absolutely not. I'm a married man. And
right.
Tom's like, well, it's, I do have other skills besides being a pilot. I can make pretty convincing hologram.
A replica program. Of your wife. You wouldn't be breaking your vows if it's a hologram of your wife.
And in the end, Tuvok agrees. He agrees.
I'm shocked, but he agreed.
So we cut to a cave. Location, which is obviously the holodeck, and there's Tuvok romancing his wife. I wrote down Trek After Dark here.
Did you direct Tim in that blocking to sort of start like
nuzzle her?
Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like he's about to give her a hickey is what he's getting into, the Vulcan hickey.
They're just beginning the to take care of business here.
Vulcan Nookie. Okay.
Vulcan Nookie.
Yeah.
And I also like this transition as they get into it. We cut to the bridge and Tom slides into frame and like, yeah, I did that. I helped take care of that. The funny transition.
Yeah, it was. Oh,
Tom slides into frame and then he goes, there's a vessel approaching. They're firing. And suddenly there's a shake on the bridge.
Yeah.
Our deflector shields do hold. Janeway orders to hail this vessel. Turns out to be another Locurum patrol ship. And it looks a lot like the one that the away team got.
Yeah, an equally cool-looking ship. Yeah.
Yes.
And the Locure captain says, we've detected photonic activity aboard your vessel. Drop your shields and prepare to be boarded. And Jane was like, what?
By the way,
activity?
That's what they've detected. Because we're like, wait. At first, I was like, wait, the doctor's not even here. And then doesn't the captain say something like, shut down our holodecks? Janeway says, oh, we didn't realize that was forbidden. We'd be happy to shut down our holodecks. In my mind, I'm like, oh, no, not right now.
No, but it would have been funny if they said, the Locurum captain said, it is absolutely illegal for any citizen to be having sex with a hologram, with a photonic. Like, we cannot allow that. We're detecting that on your ship right now. And then it cuts to Paris's face. Just looking up like, oh no. But yes, very funny.
It was very funny. They fire some sort of disruption field like they did to the Delta Flyer. We cut back to the cave set in the holodeck mid Trek After Dark. And suddenly T'Pol starts to, stutter, and Tuvok is really unhappy. And
you needed a shot of Tuvok's eye close up, just twitching, just total complete. Just
like, what's going on?
What's happening? I hate this. Yes.
We go back to the bridge. Chakotay says that disruptor field is aimed right at holodeck 2. They're so confused on the bridge. Janeway fires a shot.
God.
And we cut back to the...
Well, you tell Janeway. You say, it's Tuvok. He's in the holodeck. You say on the ship. On the bridge, yeah.
we cut back to the holodeck, and T'Pol disappears, and Tuvok grumbles and then exits. He's like... stuck in the holodeck. And,
oh my God.
Mid-romance. But anyway, we go back to the bridge. The captain, the Locurum captain, says he wants to inspect for photonics. She says, you can't do that, but you can escort us or we'll destroy you.
Your sensors have detected all of our armament, all of our weaponry, you know? So would you like us to attack you, or would you want to just sort of escort us to the...
We'll turn everything
of your
off
space?
And we'll...
We'll turn off our holodecks. We won't...
So he agrees. He agrees. And then Janeway says, sometimes a little diplomacy requires a little saber rattling. So
correct. Yeah.
We go to space. We see the Locurum ship. I still love the color of these ships. I still think they're cool.
Yeah. All right. So now we're back in Locurum Medical Bay. It's Lieutenant Jaren talking about her father in his aeroponics bay, pruning his vines, talking about her mother, reading in her favorite chair. So it's a sort of another bonding scene between Jaren and the doctor, really, in Seven's body. Jaren then brings out this news that she feels there's someone who would really, really enjoy meeting Seven/the doctor. Mm-hmm. Seven, the doctor, says, well, who would that be? And Jaren's like, my brother, Loden. And the doctor sort of takes your brother. And Jaren's like, no, you'd like him. I mean, he's ambitious, accomplished. Mm-hmm. He'd love your sense of humor. So in essence, Jaren is trying to set up her brother with Seven of Nine, who in reality is the doctor at this point. So
it's
a crazy, confusing thing. But again, humorous and more humor in this scene, mm-hmm. but another bonding scene. Rennick then calls Seven of Nine to go to the bridge.
Mm-hmm. And we go to the Locurum bridge, and Rennick welcomes her to the bridge, and the lights are low on the bridge, the alien bridge. And he's feeling a little romantic too. There's a lot of romance.
Oh,
in this
God,
episode.
There is. And this scene is exactly the scene that Harry Kim invites Seven of Nine in season 4 down to the mess hall with the low lights and everything.
Oh, yeah.
This is the exact same thing. And,
that's funny.
And Harry's trying to get Seven, you know, to get jiggy with it. And here, Rennick is trying to get Seven to get jiggy with it. Same thing.
Although it's the doctor now.
It's really the doctor, exactly.
Yes, the lights are dim. He breaks out 2 glasses of synthahol because now he's been hooked on the synthahol.
Yeah.
But the doctor promised Seven that he wouldn't drink while he's in her body. So he's got to refuse the wine.
Yep.
And then Rennick says that the pulsar's EM field vibrations against their ship's hull are converted into sound and transmitted into the room. So it sounds like whales almost. You see this light.
Yeah. But before that, you jump what happens. So after she refuses the synthahol, he says, well, I got to show you something. And she's like, okay. And that's when he says, oh, take a look at this. And on their view screen comes up this awesome looking.
It's a pulsar
cluster. Exactly.
Yes.
But it's again. It's flirty. It's very, very flirty.
Very flirty. He says our poets call it the window of dreams.
Yep.
And then there's sort of this whale sound. That's the pulsar's EM vibrations.
Mm-hmm. She calls him on it. She's like, okay, rapid pulse, respiratory distress. You may be having a reaction to the pulsar's radiation. We should get you to the medical bay. And Ronnie's like, no, I'm not going to the medical bay. He's like, well, you know, you starship captains, you're all alike. You're trying to be tough for all this stuff. And Ronnie's like, no, I don't need an exam to know what I'm suffering from. And he reaches in and goes for the big kiss. He
kisses her, but it's the doctor. It's all very confusing. And then the doctor shoves him back.
Yeah.
And he apologizes. He's embarrassed now. And the doctor says, yes, you were absolutely wrong about this. And he says, I didn't mean to offend you. It's just I've never met a woman like you before. and the doctor Seven says, that's because there are no women
like me. And then storms out.
Funny.
Yeah, really funny stuff.
Then we go to, I think, the medical bay again.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
And the doctor returns to their medical bay, sees Jaren again, and tells Jaren what happened. This is the one where I thought the blocking didn't work, I will say.
Oh.
So this is where the doctor comes back in, and it's kind of going... doing some busy work, like heading to the shelves to get something, I think. And then I couldn't tell. I was like, then reached up high for something. And it looked like Seven was going to climb the shelves. So high. It just, I didn't buy it. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny enough. I wasn't really watching that. I was listening to the, I was more in the dialogue, you know, which was, you now learn that Jaren, in essence, has feelings for Brannick, right? He's saying, well, when you spend time with someone enough time, you start getting attractions to them. Mm-hmm. And that's when the doctor slash Seven's like, wait, you have feelings for him? And then Seven slash the doctor tries to warn Jaren away from that, saying that he's somewhat of a Lothario, whatever she calls him.
You need someone who appreciates your talents, someone overflowing with intelligence and compassion, someone capable. And that's when
the neck
climbing up the shelf.
Oh, that's when she does that. Okay. And then she pulls something then, right? Yes. A neck muscle. And then that's Jaren was like, oh, no, it looks like a little spasm. And so she starts kind of massaging.
Yeah, Jaren says, I learned some techniques from our last medic and starts massaging the doctor slash Seven.
Seven. The doctor enjoys it just a little bit too much.
Yes. And then the doctor Seven says, you know, there's something that you don't know about me, something that I have to tell you. And that's where I was like, no, don't do it.
And Seven slash the doctor thinks he's been had. Like he feels like Jaren knows everything.
And yeah, because Jaren says, well, it's all right, I already know. And the doctor Seven's like, wait, you do? How do you know?
Yeah.
And Jaren says, your cybernetic implants, your portable regenerator.
Yeah.
And finally, we realize that Jaren says you're part
Borg. That's what she knows.
Nothing to be ashamed of.
No.
And the doctor slash him is like, whew.
Because
the doctor thought that he had been caught in this whole scam they're pulling. But
we get pulled out of this scene by a hail from another crew member saying security to medical bay. Lieutenant Jaren answers, and whoever is talking says, the prisoner is ill. He's requesting treatment by his crewmate. So Harry is you know,
he's faking a seizure.
Yeah, he's faking.
He's faking a seizure.
Love that scene
in the jail, and he's like, oh, he's you know, clutching his stomach and doubled over. And
but I went right into my line though. After the guard walked away, I'm like, where the hell have you been? When I did,
it was very funny.
God,
funny scene. Yeah. He fakes it.
Yeah.
He says, I had to fake a seizure to get you back here. And the doctor slash Seven says, calm down. We're getting somewhere. And they download the doctor again back out of Seven's systems.
Yes.
And Seven is still critical of the doctor. She's like, yes, well, we're getting somewhere, you know, when the doctor isn't indulging himself. So they're still bickering a little bit. The doctor's enjoying this.
Kissing Ronick on the bridge. Is that your idea of restraint? I love it. And then Harry's like, kissing?
What I loved in this, so they start talking about kissing on the bridge. And then she says, and the massage from Lieutenant Jaren. And the doctor's like, that's entirely therapeutic. And Seven goes, you became sexually, aroused
in my body.
The look on Bob's face, I've never seen so much acting in because his eyes went wide. He sort of was like, he didn't even say anything, but you knew that Seven was right. They start to bicker a little bit here about Seven's like, let's just take care of business. And the doctor's like, this kind of enjoying life is what it's all about. Like he's never experienced this sort of, you know, since these sort of sensations, they're not indulgences. It's living, it's life. It's, you know, the air in your lungs, the adrenaline in your veins. He didn't know what he was missing before this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great little conversation.
It is.
And then Harry ultimately says, we need a plan, anything with the comm system. And Seven says that she saw Rannick's, the captain's command codes.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can get those command codes to Voyager, Harry says, we can disable their shields and get us out of here. And the doctor's like, how are we going to do that? How are we going to get it there? And Seven says, well, the subspace transceiver is on the flyer.
Yeah.
And Harry says, like,
send a message.
Right? Yeah. Harry says, let's get on the flyer. So, so off we go.
Yeah. And it's the doctor who says that I can get us on board. Mm-hmm. So he's thinking, he walks onto the bridge.
He says, can I speak to you in private? And they head to the Delta Flyer inside.
The back area of the lab.
The lab area. She apologizes. The doctor slash Seven apologizes how she behaved before. Asks if they can start over. Drinks a toast. She lets her hair down. She pulls this thing, this shot behind her hair of like it's the syringe that she's taken from. She's taken the syringe. That was what was holding her hair up.
Oh.
So she pulls
I did not put that. Okay. Yeah. I didn't put two and two together. Because in reality, the amount of time that the hair department spent on her coif to get it the way it is, there's no way that she could have just like pulled it off that quickly. So
that was the syringe holding her hair. She lets her hair down.
Yeah.
And then they there's some music and they start to waltz. And it's the most awkward waltz dance I've ever seen in my life.
Hilarious. But remember, I didn't see this. I didn't see this episode until now. So I was on the floor watching this awkward waltz scene. Yeah. It was so great.
Whether it's Seven or the doctor dancing, it would be awkward and totally leading the whole thing. And then the captain is called to the bridge. He tries to leave. The doctor slash Seven like,
nope,
spins him around, doesn't let him leave, sort of spins him into a hold and then jabs that sedative into his neck, knocking him out. And that was very funny.
It was.
We go back to the Voyager bridge, I think, after this. And I love Janeway talking to Tuvok by his station. He's back at his station. She says, knows, basically she says she knows what's going on.
No, but she doesn't.
She says, I appreciate your sense of duty, Tuvok. Yeah. But we can handle it. And he says, my illness is in the early stages. I can control it. And she says, if I remember correctly, last time you came down with the Tarkalian flu was seven years ago.
Oh, so she did do that? A little quotation.
She didn't do that. She didn't do it literally, but she was sort of putting it together here. So she does kind of figure it out on her own.
Yeah. And then Neelix shows up.
She says, hey, the holodeck's at your disposal.
So she knows.
She and Tom are on the same page.
She's on the same page. Neelix is not on the same page.
No, he's not. No. he has made some, I think, what did he make? Some soup or something?
It was
something in a bowl. I don't know. His grandmother's recipe to help even the most stubborn flu. Tuvok doesn't smell anything. I love Neelix says, exactly. I prepared it how you like it. No herbs or spices of any kind. Practically tasteless. And then we get a hail.
From the flyer.
From the flyer. It's Seven. And
with her hair down.
With her hair down. It's really the doctor.
Yeah.
And acting like the doctor says we're being held prisoner in the Locurum patrol ship.
Yeah.
And I'm sending over our location and the command codes to disable their shields. Mm-hmm. And Janeway says, are the doctor and Harry all right? The doctor, Seven, says, Ensign Kim is his usual chipper self. As for me, I'm looking forward to a long, uneventful shift in sick bay. That's when Janeway's like, wait, doctor? And the doctor, Seven, goes, it's long a long story, Captain.
Yeah.
So this is where they realize they may be in more trouble than they thought.
Yeah.
So we're still with this escort out of their sector when Janeway says, you know what, let's get rid of these guys, target their power matrix.
Yeah.
We got to make this shot count, direct hit, says Tuvok, and we take off, Max.
We're out of there. Yeah. Ronak is lying on the bio bed now. So we're back in that medical bay. Jaren doesn't know what's going on. She's like, what's happening with him? And Seven's like, well, apparently Ronak has never, Ronak has had very low tolerance to synthahol, lower than my mm-hmm. low tolerance for synthahol. And Jaren's like, well, that doesn't really sound like Rannick. And Seven's like, well, it's probably something he would not admit to his crew. And right. We should probably keep this between us. Yeah.
Then Rannick wakes up.
Yeah. Jaren revives him.
Jaren revives him and he orders the doctor / Seven to be arrested or seized here. And then they hear that Voyager is detected on their scanners. Voyager's approaching. So they head to the bridge. And then he says, bring her along. I want her where I can see her.
Yeah.
And I wrote down, that sounds risky. Like, why wouldn't you put somebody who just like outsmarted you? Why wouldn't you put them in jail?
In the brig. Yeah.
In the brig. But
also I felt that was because he still had a crush on her.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah. Okay. So they bring Seven / Doctor along with a guard. And we go out to a space flyby. This is Voyager. This is a CG ship. This is not our old models that they used to use model shot. This was a CG ship. It looked pretty cool. Did some kind of cool banking turn.
Yeah, it was.
We go to the Voyager bridge. We open a channel. And just before we open a channel, Janeway says, stand by with those command codes to Chakotay. Mm-hmm. So she's going to try to talk to them, but if not, she's going to use their secret information. Mm-hmm. Janeway says, you know, she tells Rannick, we don't want to fight you. Just return our people and we will be on our way. Mm-hmm. And Rannick is pissed off. He's like, they were transporting photonic insurgents and biogenic material. And Janeway's like, we will disable you guys. She turns to Chakotay, gives him a nod, and he enters those Locirum command codes. Mm-hmm. Back on the bridge, or the Locirum bridge, they start to lose their ventral shield grid. Mm-hmm. Rannick says compensate, but Jaren says they've tapped into our shield matrix. They're using your command authorization. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to our bridge, and Chakotay's like, wait a minute, they're rerouting their power to their warp matrix. And then Captain Rannick says, okay, if you fire on us, you will trigger a core breach and all of your people will be killed.
Along with us. So,
along with us. Yeah.
So he basically goes all in.
He goes all in. Yeah. Checkmate. Janeway ends the transmission and she orders a tractor beam. Mm-hmm.
Rannick says full reverse, target their emitters. And of course, they do break free of our tractor beam. Janeway says, Chakotay, can you send a comm signal directly to Seven's cortical node? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, yeah, I can do this. So Seven is receiving a message from Janeway. And Janeway's saying, Doctor, if you can hear me, we need your help. Try to disable their shields. Mm-hmm. And that's when Seven quickly downloads the EMH into the mobile emitter, which then causes confusion amongst everybody because now they're photonic here, right? Yep. She knocks the guard down. All mayhem breaks loose at this point. Mm-hmm. And the doctor
she does
says,
a quick disarm and a face punch to the, she grabs the guy's weapon, face
hands
punches
it to
him.
The doctor, right?
And hands it to the doctor. I love when at first she does the move and then the doctor runs and hides behind her, which is very funny. Bob ran and hid behind Jerry Ryan. It was funny. And then Seven gives this weapon to the doctor and says, hold them here. I'm going to work on the shield controls. And the doctor takes the gun, but he's like holding it funny. He's very nervous with this weapon. And
he gets it taken away from him.
Yeah. He does say to them, I'm not afraid to use this, but he's terrified to use it. Mm-hmm. And he has jumped the guard and Rannick sort of double jump him, overpower him and disarm him. Rannick fires near Seven, but he doesn't shoot her, which is to me was a sign of like, oh, he still cares.
He still
about her.
Cares about her, definitely.
Yeah, because he could have shot her easily.
Yeah. What Jaren says is like, look, Seven or she just destabilized the shield grid. It's failing. And Rannick says, you know, watch them. But Seven says, look, if you try to reinitialize the grid, it's going to overload. Mm-hmm. Don't do this. Rannick doesn't listen. And the panel explodes.
Anyway.
Yeah, he does it anyway. Yeah. And there's significant injury on Rennick's face. I mean, it just looks like part of his face is gone. And really,
That explosion, by the way, was like a lot of styrofoam. You know, we used to use like styrofoam debris and stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
It felt like a little too much.
Too much? Moment. Okay. Yeah, you felt like it could have been dialed down. So from 0 to 10, how much explosion was that?
That was like an 8.
Okay, probably. And what would you have dialed it down to then?
A 5.
Okay, probably. So yeah, about 20% less.
But I think that when I directed this, I remember feeling like often we don't have enough in these action moments. I was like, let's make it big. And yeah. I think I went a little too big.
Okay, all right. Jaren says, stay back. And the doctor slash 7 drops down. Well, no, just the doctor.
No, just the doctor outside at this point.
Because I'm a doctor, let me help.
And so back on Voyager, Tuvok says their shields are down and we have a lock. And Janeway says, away team, stand by for transport. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the Locurum Bridge and the doctor says, no, Captain, yep. I've got injured here. I can't leave.
Yep.
This man will die without immediate surgery. Mm-hmm. And then he says to Rannik, he says, I know it's hard for you to understand, but I am the person that you've been getting to know the last few days. And so this is amazing because he's a photonic. And Rannik has, they're very biased, obviously, against photonics. But he's saying, I'm a photonic and I have been getting to know you. The doctor says to Jaren,
yeah,
I know you have feelings for Rannik, but if he dies, you're never going to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
And So
clearly she lets him work on him at that point, right?
Yeah. And then we go to... the Locurum Medical Bay. Mm-hmm. The doctor has stabilized Rannik.
He's repaired all his wounds. He's totally back to normal again, basically. Yes. Right.
Yep. And he's in full health. And he basically says, despite his bias against photonics, that he's very grateful the doctor saved his life.
Yeah.
Rannik feels a little awkward about kissing the doctor. And then the doctor tries to be a matchmaker here. And he talks about, there are other women who might appreciate you. I'm just not one of them. And Jaren thanks them, says goodbye. The doctor says to them, I don't know if this experience will change your opinion of photonics, but I hope it's a start.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sweet.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
It is.
Yeah. And then we go to... a hallway and back on Voyager, and we see Paris and Tuvok.
Has this ever happened before? Has there ever been a Paris Tuvok walk and talk?
Well, here's the other thing.
No,
not really. Paris Tuvok walk and talk. Here's the other thing.
Yeah,
I did this on a long lens instead of the usual.
Usually
we do this on a dolly or Steadicam.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, but it was a very long lens where Tuvok came around one corner, I came around another. And we kind of walked into a tighter shot.
Cool.
Yeah, but it was a long lens shot in a hallway, which we never did.
And yeah,
it looked so great.
And it did
made the show feel much more, in my opinion, cinematic and not the typical kind of medium shot walking down the hallway with
people.
It's great.
Yeah,
it was very cool.
I liked it.
Tuvok does say his condition has passed. He's fully recovered and thanks Paris for his help.
Paris goes, don't mention it. I just hope everything was okay. Tuvok says, not exactly. My wife's ears are 4 millimeters shorter than your facsimile.
Yeah, I made her ears were too big.
He totally called you on that. It's like so funny.
Yeah. And Paris goes, well, I took a little artistic license. And I'm like, does he think that Vulcans like bigger ears? Like that's a Ferengi thing,
isn't it?
It's a sexy thing. Exactly.
Oh my God.
But Tuvok says it was adequate, but it's no substitute for my real wife. And it's a nice moment because Paris is like, yeah, I get that. Like it was very sincere and sweet. And
yeah.
I like that little scene.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to our last scene in sick bay. There's the doctor at his desk. It was the most Seven walks in behind him. He doesn't see her, but he hears someone walk in. And he says, please state the nature of the medical emergency. But it was the most depressed version of that line I'd ever heard. Please state the nature of the medical emergency. It was great. I loved hearing like a different version of that line. It was great.
Yeah.
She's brought in a tray of Earth culinary indulgences.
Yeah.
That was what they were arguing about, you know? And she's going to... eat this with him and describe it to him so he can continue to enjoy, the senses, the sense of eating. I love when he says to her, he goes, oh, the mess hall is 3 decks up in case you've forgotten. I've lost my appetite permanently. which was just a funny line to me.
Where that was in this? Oh yes, yes, that was in the final.
She comes in with the food, and he's like, "The mess hall's three decks up. In case you've forgotten, I've lost my appetite
permanently." Yeah, those are good lines for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. But,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And there's another good line at the end when the doctor says, "Well, what about the wine? It doesn't exactly agree with you." And she goes, "Well, if I become sick, I won't have to go far. I'm already in sick bay." So
yeah,
cute.
It was a cute scene.
Yeah,
cute,
it's a nice little episode. Cute button scene there. So. Yeah. All right. So what is your lesson out of all this?
My lesson is sometimes seeing things through someone else's eyes can teach you a lot. To walk in someone else's shoes, you can learn a lot about life. So
it's very true.
Yeah, that's my lesson. What about you?
Mine is more about try to take the time to experience life instead of rushing through it, because there's that whole scene about, you know, when the doctor first starts eating the cheesecake and the other food, and it's just like, oh my gosh. And that's, you know, that's just something that reminds me of a dinner I had with my uncle. And I was eating the food so quickly. He's like, "You know, the only time that you actually get to taste the food is while you're chewing it in your mouth that. Enjoy the taste of this food. What are you gulping it down for?" Yeah. Right? It's like eating it. Like, I mean, that's typically the way a dog will eat food. It just swallows it everything so quickly. And you don't need to do that. So really, just the lesson here is just slow down, take the time to enjoy the experience that we call life, you know, whether it be eating something, drinking something, attending a concert, reading a book, just enjoy it. Don't rush.
What's your rating on this episode?
I'll give it a high 7. So 7.9, just below 8. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I'll give it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What do you
think? This is crazy. Okay. I rated this. I just pulled up the Admiral's rating. I have my rating here. So my rating is an 8. I gave this an 8 because I thought it was really fun. Even though I know I directed it, there were some imperfections, but overall it was a really great episode. I gave it an 8. You gave it a 7.9. The Admiral and Captain's average rating for body and soul is 8.
Bam. Right there. We're both right there. Exactly. And the Admirals are right there with us.
Yeah. Yeah. This was a fun episode.
It was. I'm glad I watched this one. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into this week's episode. And tune in next week when Robbie and I will be recapping the episode Nightingale. See you then.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.